Updates to my carry gun this week on Mail Call Mondays. I'm John McQuay with 8541 Tactical, and this is Mail Call Mondays, the show that answers your questions about precision rifles, optics, and equipment. Welcome to another Mail Call Mondays, and this Monday we are going to talk about my everyday carry gun, my off-duty carry, and some of the updates that I have done to it. So, I don't tend to change a lot on my carry gun or my duty gun because those are the guns that I might have to actually defend my life with, so I want them to work the exact same way. Now, competition guns and range guns, I change things on them all the time because I'm constantly trying new products and new techniques, so those things get changed up all the time. But my core guns that I actually carry regularly tend to stay pretty much the same. So I've talked a little bit before about the Glock 19 that I have here. This is a customized Glock 19 by Danger Close Armament, and this is their signature package. So it's got the brain texture on it, has the two-tone frame, it has their slide cuts up here. So I've got top serrations, forward cocking serrations, because this is a Gen 4, so it didn't originally have forward cocking serrations on it. They have shooter's ledges on here, so they give you a little bit more of a ledge to push down on with your support side thumb. They have shooter's cuts here in the trigger guard just to prevent the frame from rubbing on your finger when you're in there. And of course, they have a high cut here underneath the trigger guard to avoid that ugly Glock knuckle. One of the really neat things, though, is this heavy brain texture that they use on the frame of the gun. I really like this because it's pretty gentle on the skin when your skin is just rubbing across it. So when the grip is actually against your stomach, because I carry this mostly in appendix mode, then it doesn't really tear your skin up. But because the recesses in here are fairly large, when you actually grip it with your hand, your skin sinks down into those recesses and really locks the gun in. So even if your hands are wet, sweaty, bloody, etc., the brain texture gives it some place to go and you get a mechanical lock on the gun. So I find it to work really, really well in a carry type situation. And they do some really nice border work on it, so the gun looks very visually pleasing. Now, when they cut the slide, I did have them do a DLC finish on the slide, which it has quite a bit of wear on it now because I do carry this gun almost every day. So for several years, daily carry, shooting regularly, it gets wear, and that's the life for a firearm. So that's the basic gun itself. Now, for quite a few years, I was running a Trijicon RMR RM01 Type 1 on this gun. I know it's a mouthful, but I'll go over what that is here in a minute. And then for a light, I was running the Enforce APL-C, which works fairly well. In fact, this is the most trouble-free Insight light that I've had. I've got quite a few others that have either battery drain issues or a variety of other ones. I've had one have to go back for flickering issues, things of that nature. But this APL-C has worked very, very well, and that's why it stayed on my carry gun for quite some time. So we'll start off with the RMR, because it was replaced with a new Type 2 RMR, RM07. So it's a 6 MOA dot. It has manual adjustments, and it has the Type 2 improvement. So the battery contacts, the way the lens glass is set in here, and a couple of other things. Now, originally, the Type 1 RM01 was my first RMR. So I started out in the handgun red dots. I wasn't real sure about them. A friend gave me a Burris Fastfire that I had on this gun for a little while. Actually, I take that back. It wasn't ever on this gun. It was on my other 19 MOS. So I ran it on the 19 MOS for a little while and found that, okay, the dot worked great, but the quality of the Burris just really was not up to par. Not something I'm willing to bet my life on. But I like some of the features on the Burris. The Burris had an automatic brightness adjustment that did an absolutely fantastic job. The Burris, actually, from what I seem to understand with it, is its photo sensor was looking forward. So if you turned on a tack light, the photo sensor would notice that, hey, there's a lot of light on the target, and it would bring the dot brightness up. The RMR, it seems to sample the brightness from above you. So when I was shopping for RMRs, I decided to go with the automatic only because I didn't really want to screw with switches. I didn't want to mess with having to turn it up, turn it down. The RM01 is a great option because you just put the battery in and forget about it. Replace the battery once a year, and you really don't have to deal with problems at all. This battery has been in here for a very, very long time, and it is still going strong even right now because there's no way to turn it off. So as long as the battery is in here, it is on. So it's a great gun for nightstand, whatever. You don't have to worry about turning it on, cycling through modes, etc. So I thought that was a great option, but when I actually started using it and using it with a weapon-mounted light, I would notice that very often if I was close to a target and fired up the weapon-mounted light, I could wash out the dot, or it would be difficult to see the dot because the dot power stayed low and the tack light brought the light at the target up. Only when you had open sky or bright overhead lights did the RMR ramp the brightness up on the actual dot itself. So that was a problem that I dealt with for a little while. Now, the APL-C only has a 200 lumen output, which is not fantastic when we're dealing with lights like this is an XH-35 here that puts out 1,000 lumens plus. It's not spectacular, but this is a deep carry gun. This is my everyday gun, and it's really my get out of trouble gun. So most of the contacts and encounters that you're going to have with a gun like this are going to be 15 yards and in, and 200 lumens is sufficient for that. Now, I wouldn't want to have to go clear a dark warehouse. I wouldn't want to have to deal with large, dark, open spaces with this. It's matching the equipment to the job. On my duty gun, I have an X300 Alpha, which is that provides a ton of light, more than enough for most things that I use a pistol for when I'm working. So I decided on my upgrades I wanted to do two things. One, is I wanted to get rid of the automatic adjustment on the RMR because now I've been carrying a red dot, specifically an RMR, on my duty gun for some time. It works very, very well in a wide variety of lighting conditions, and I have figured out how to get the brightness set to where I want it to be. What I have found and what I teach my guys now is on the RMR, set it to where you want it, but set it for a brightness level that is going to work with your tack light turned on and a brightness level that is going to work outdoors in the middle of afternoon in a wide open parking lot. The reason I say to do that versus relying on the automatic brightness is the automatic brightness is automatically not ever going to be exactly what it is you want. It's always going to be a compromise. While we are setting our brightness to be a compromise when we're setting it manually, we're setting it to something that we know is what we're going to get. Whereas the automatic brightness, you don't really know what you're going to get. The thing is deciding on its own what you're going to get. So I will generally have guys run the brightness all the way up to the maximum brightness and then come down two notches. And if you're running an X300 Alpha, something, or X300U Alpha, something like one of the latest tack lights out there, it's going to put out enough power that with the dot two notches down from the top, you're still going to get a clean, bright dot. You're not going to get a ton of starburst, a ton of blooming from the dot. When the light is off, you will. It'll be very bright when your tack light is not on. But in any situation, we need to be able to identify a target before we know we can engage the target. So as soon as you fire up that weapon light, that is going to bring the light at the target up, and it's going to bring the apparent or the contrast of the dot down so that it's now an appropriate brightness level. Contrast that to if you're outside and you have to draw and go to guns quickly, you don't have time to be screwing around with this dot. So you want a very bright dot if you have to do something really quick, because that's going to be your fastest dot. It's going to be easiest to pick up when it's really bright. And again, in broad daylight in the middle of the afternoon, you're going to want that dot to be cranked up pretty high. So what I find with the dot turned up that high, it really doesn't matter what situation you're going to go into, because if you're outside in the bright light and you're not going to use a tack light, that high dot level is going to be appropriate. If you're indoors and you draw your handgun, you come up on target and light things up, that weapon light is going to bring the target up and your dot is going to be an appropriate brightness setting. The only place where you really would want to crank that dot way, way, way down is if you are making an entry under night vision or you're operating with NODs. Then you need to turn the dot brightness down because you may not be illuminating your tack light at all. You may just be working with NODs, or you may have an IR illuminator on the gun. If you have an IR laser, IR illuminator on the gun, then that's going to be your aiming point. You'll want the dot low so that the brightness of the dot does not give you away if the target has NODs. That's a really niche situation. Not a lot of guys are going to run into that. That's not going to be a carry gun or a off-duty or an EDC gun kind of situation. That's a little bit more towards the SWAT or special ops kind of thing. So I really wanted to have a dot that I could adjust the brightness and dial it in. Now, the RM07 and most of the Type 2 RMRs, anything that's got buttons on it, does actually also have an automatic mode. And after 16 hours of inactivity, it will drop into the automatic mode. And that way, it will just automatically work like the RM01. So to bring it out of it, and I do this every day when I do my pre-flight check, I go ahead and bump one of the buttons to bring it out of automatic mode, goes back into the last known brightness mode, and off we go. You can also lock out the buttons and put it in automatic brightness mode, but I really don't recommend doing that. Again, I want to be able to manually select my mode, and unfortunately, Trigicon has not decided to include a feature that would allow you to manually set the brightness and then lock it out. That would be ideal. I would really like to be able to set my brightness, lock the buttons out, and then have it stay there for 16 hours until it goes into its low power sleep mode. So after 16 hours, the RMRs will drop into automatic mode. Now, for me, when it goes into automatic mode, it's usually already in its pistol safe, closed up. It's not seeing any light, so the dot will ramp way down. I believe it's brightness level 2. It'll sit at brightness level 2, which is as low as it can go in automatic mode. So that is why I switched over to the dot. Now, while I did that, I also went ahead and got rid of the MOS plate. For quite some time, I was using the regular included Glock MOS plate with this, but with the RMR, the plate left a huge amount of space forward and back on the optic. So the only thing that was really holding the optic in place were the two little divots and the screws. There wasn't any ledge or any lug to recoil against. So you had the two small lugs that were inside, and with the MOS plate, there seems to be quite a bit of slop with that. So a friend of mine, Jim over at Red Ghost Gun Shop, gave me one of the forward controls plates to try out. And it really is a pretty cool setup. Now, I also have a C&H Precision plate that is very similar to it. The difference between the two is the forward controls plate. It is set so that the RMR drops down perfectly into it, and it's fairly snug. It's almost a press fit when I put the RMR in it. And then it has two lugs at the front, much like the MOS plate, but the lugs are much snugger fitting inside the RMR. And then you use standard size screws to go down into the plate. Now, the C&H Precision plate actually has posts that go up into the RMR, and then you have smaller, finer screws that go down into those posts. And the benefit of that is you get more thread engagement on those, but you have to use smaller screws, and we have run into issues in the past with the screw heads stripping out trying to remove the screws. So the forward controls plate allows you to still use Loctite like you normally would, still use a larger screw head, and still be able to get the screws out without running the risk of stripping them out. I think both plates have their merits. I believe CNH Precision, the new version of their plate, also has forward lugs in addition to the posts, so that is going to give you more resistance to shear forces on the optic. But at some point, I think we've got enough holding power on it. I mean, I rack these things on ledges all day long and don't run into any problems with them, even with the standard MOS plate. So that was an advantage for me to switch over. Now, I haven't had a chance to pull this off and reinstall it yet to see what kind of zero shift I get. I will tell you that I took the RMR right out of the box, installed the forward controls plate, installed the RMR, torqued it down, and it was perfectly zeroed. There was no shift at all right out of the box. Everything dropped on and everything was centered up. I didn't have to turn the adjustment screws at all. That's pretty amazing. That tells me that a forward controls plate is going to be a pretty good deal right off the bat. I had a very similar experience with the CNH Precision plate that I'm using on my Glock 34. Both these plates are going through testing right now to see if there's something that I'm going to propose to our command for our duty guns. So they have a ton of benefits over the standard MOS plates because the standard MOS plate just has a ton of slop in them. We're noticing that when we remove and reinstall optics, they almost never come back to zero. We always have to do some zero adjustment after replacing the battery to get the gun back on and sufficiently zeroed for use on the street. So that is the reason for replacing the plate. One other big benefit on it is the forward controls plates and the CNH Precision plates as well. They are flared when they come up so that you do not need to use a sealing plate on the bottom of the RMR. The MOS plates do require a sealing plate for the RMR to be waterproof. So it's nice that you don't have to worry about that with this. And it also, it's just a little bit more aesthetically pleasing because you don't have this hard ledge. You have a taper into it. So the plate looks nice overall. It took me a while to install it. This is kind of silly because it is a, again, another aesthetic issue. But the Danger Close slides have this 45 degree cut on the edges. So it's not a round radius anymore. The edges of the slides are cut at 45, which looks really nice when you're looking at the gun, but the CNH Precision and the forward controls plates do have the stock radius to match up with the stock pistol, so I thought it was going to look kind of goofy. Actually, it's almost very difficult to tell the way the radius blends into the radius into the RMR. It's really not something that you would notice unless I called your attention out to it specifically. So, fit great, went on, no problems at all, and the forward controls installation instructions are pretty idiot-proof. They even label the bags of the screws so you know what you're getting into. So, once I get probably 500 or 600 more rounds on this, which in this COVID ammunition crunch may be a little while, I'll come back and do a full review specifically on the forward controls plate. And I am almost ready to do the full review on the CNH Precision plate, although they have been ahead of me. So I think we're a generation or two behind on the plate now. They've released newer plates to replace the one that I'm actually testing right now. So that is the optic and the plate. Now let's move forward to the light. So as I said before, I had the Enforce APLC on here, which is a 200 lumen weapon light. It did fairly well. I mean, I never had a problem on a night shoot with being able to identify a shooter or no shoot target. Never had problems being able to clear houses, clear residential areas, etc. with it. But more lumens is usually better. So the Surefire XC1B, so this is the Bravo version of the light, it bumps it up to 300 lumens. Now, I had the original XC1, and I really did not like that light. That had some significant issues. I am a huge, huge Surefire fan. Most of the time, if I'm picking a handgun light, it's going to be a Surefire light. The XC1, the first one that came out, I actually picked one up because I thought I was going to put it on this gun and run that as my primary light. But they kind of screwed the pooch on the switching. So the original XC1 had momentary only switching on the paddles. So that meant that no matter what, you had to hold the paddle down to get your light on. That's fine if you've got both hands to work with. You can get a good grip and you can pin that paddle down. The light comes on. Yay, you're good to go. You can ID your target. You can do what you need to do. The problem runs into if you are not in first place in your gunfight and you end up with an injured arm. So now you have one arm out of the fight, or you're scooping up a kid, or you have to open a door and clear for whatever if you take one hand out of it. Now you have a problem, because that's great. You have momentary. You can illuminate the light with your trigger finger, which is not a recommended technique. And then when you go to fire the shot, hey, guess what? I don't have a light anymore. So momentary on, as soon as I release it to go fire the shot, it goes off. Now, the original XC1 did have a cross bolt for constant on. So if you knew you were going to need this hand, you could lock the light on, take the hand off, do whatever, and then no matter where your trigger finger is at, your light is locked on. But when you need to turn the light off, you have to come back and turn the light off. If this arm was immobilized, injured, whatever, it really would not be a good thing to have to switch your gun in your hand, juggle it to turn the light on, and mess around with it, and then you have to totally change your shooting grip to turn the light off. So it was really a complete no-go. I pulled it off, put it on a range gun, and forgot about it. The XC1 Bravo, they fixed that. It's got a little bit higher output on it, so this is 300 lumens output, and the switching is hold for momentary or tap for constant on. So now it fixed my biggest complaint with it. So if I've got an immobilized or otherwise occupied arm, I can draw, tap the light on, ID the target, fire, 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 tap the light off, and we're good. So that is absolutely great. That fixed my major complaint. So now I feel confident in running this on the gun. Now, the other reason that I switched from the APLC to the XC1 is, again, my duty gun runs an X300U Bravo, or I'm sorry, Alpha. So it has switching that when I bring up the gun, I tap down on the switch to fire it up, do what I need to do, tap up on the switch to turn it off. We don't generally work with the momentary anymore. I come up, constant on, do what I need to do, turn it off. The XC1 works very similar. So I can come up, tap the switch down to bring the light on, and then when I'm done shooting, come down, tap the switch to bring it off. So tap the switch on, tap the switch off. That works much closer to what my duty gun is. The optic now is much closer to my duty gun. Actually, it's the exact same optic I'm running on my duty gun. So now, again, my off-duty is very similar to my on-duty gun. And it's really important because I've had situations here in the last year that has reinforced me that when the ball drops, if you are trained to a certain level, you function on automatic. Your brain is concentrating on the executive functions. Everything else needs to just completely run automatically. And so drawing your handgun, acquiring a sight picture, engaging your light, that all needs to be going on in the background while your brain is consciously deciding, is this a lawful use of force? Can I fire? What's going on? And obviously, deciding, is the background appropriate? You know, all those other factors that you need to play through. So having your guns work at a subconscious level and having them similar between guns, is a kind of an important thing. So that was the other thing that drove the updates. The other one is the RMR RM01 has a very fine dot in it, and I'm beginning to see that on handguns. I like the larger dot. This has a 6 MOA dot in it. Really, I think a 7.5 MOA triangle like I have in the Delta Point Pro, that would probably be my first place choice or my first choice, but Trijicon does not offer a triangle or a chevron in the battery-powered RMRs, so I'm kind of stuck with what I can get. But the 6 MOA dot, when we think about it, at 100 yards, that's only covering a 6-inch circle, so it is not too fine for long-distance shooting, although I do prefer a finer dot if I was going to put it as a secondary sight on a carbine. But I could still make a 100-yard shot with this optic with no problem at all. And the larger dots are faster, closer up, and they're easier to pick out if you screw up and the dot is at a bad setting versus the background light. So that was the main switch over here. Now, the other things that I have going on in this gun are very minimal. Danger Close sent us one of their barrels probably about 2 years ago now, so it's been running that barrel, and it's a nice titanium nitride, so gold finish on it. And then I also have a Overwatch Precision trigger in this. I have not sent this back to Danger Close for their in-house trigger yet. They didn't have an in-house trigger when they built the signature gun originally for me, but I went ahead and swapped out to the Overwatch Precision trigger because I just really did not like the feel of the Glock trigger, and it looked kind of goofy to have a top-end gun like this and still have a factory plastic trigger in there. The Overwatch trigger is an aluminum trigger shoe. Now, the trigger bar and all the other guts in there are factory Glock, which is good because factory Glock has worked very, very well. It's designed perfectly. I've messed with some other triggers where they have done some different things in here, and the trigger feel was not right and the reliability just wasn't there. But with the Overwatch, it's been 100% reliable for me. It is a flat-faced trigger, which I prefer the flat trigger. It just is a better feel for me. And when I'm trying to make very precise shots, if I'm trying to demo a one-hole drill or something of that nature, the feel of this trigger is much, much better. When I hit the wall with the trigger, it's definite. There's not a lot of extra flex. Now, you do get a little bit extra movement because that's the nature of the Glock trigger when you pull through the wall, but when it breaks, it is a very distinct break on the trigger because it's aluminum. So I am feeling everything is going on through those trigger parts a little bit more accurately than I do if it's muted by the plastic trigger shoe. So that aluminum trigger shoe just gives me a little bit of a better feel to it. I also like the fact on the Overwatch trigger, and this is probably the big thing for me, when I press the trigger safety goes completely flat in the face of the trigger. So as long as you are indexing the trigger correctly and you're not catching the edge of the trigger, that trigger safety goes completely flat, and I don't think about the trigger safety being there. It just feels like a big wide trigger shoe like I'd have on a precision rifle. So that is a big thing for me. Now, this is their tack trigger, so it's got that little edge at the bottom. I like the tack trigger because I tend to ride low on the trigger instead of high, and that keeps me from squeezing trigger finger between the bottom edge of the trigger and the trigger guard. So it tells me that, hey, I'm at the bottom of the trigger. Don't try to wedge things down any further. Probably not a big deal. The other trigger, I believe they call it the DAT, the D-A-T, does not have the little hooks that the tack has. But I just, I like the looks of the tack and I like the feel. So everything else in the gun, all the internal parts are regular factory Glock parts. The slide release is a non-extended Factory Glock slide release. I do not like the extended slide releases on a carry gun. I tend to start to sneak a higher and higher grip, especially if I don't have ledges to pin that thumb. When I sneak a high grip, I can end up on top of that slide stop. And that's really bad because it can cause you either to have your slide lock back while you still have rounds in the magazine, or it can cause the slide to go forward on an empty magazine and not lock back, and then you get a click when you wanted to bang, which is a really, really bad thing. So I don't really like the extended slide stops. I find, especially on a 19, since you've got a fairly narrow slide up here, that you can get onto the ledge of the slide release fairly easily. I don't need any extended buttons or switches or any of that stuff. Now, one thing that I did not change is the holster that I've been using. This is a T-Rex Arms sidecar. Now, I reached out to them several years ago and got this guy in, and it has really been probably my favorite holster. I've gone to a lot of different holsters, and I keep going back to the sidecar. Couple of reasons why. For one thing, is it's one modular system. So I've got my magazine on here. I've got the gun sits down in here. I don't have to clip on two different things. I don't have to add a magazine pouch and a holster every time I pick up and put my gun on. When you're doing it constantly, that ends up being a small thing that becomes a big thing. I put so much crap in my pockets and so many things on my belt. I'd really like to minimize what I'm putting on and off. The other thing is taking this on and off in the car is a lot easier. So I've got the plastic clips here. They are tuckable. You can't tuck your shirt in behind it. I don't mess with that. What I like about the clips is that I can snap it on really quickly. I can grab two clips, pop it off real easy. I can either just throw it in the passenger seat of the car, stick it in the door pocket, or wherever I want to put it for long car trips. I say long car trips because just driving around town, it is short enough with the 19 setup that it doesn't really wear on me much. After I did the gel wedge mod that we actually have a video on here about, I don't really get any rubbing or irritation anymore. I'm still on the same gel wedge as from when I originally put it on here. I don't see it wearing out anytime soon. It's got a little bit of rubbing here at the bottom, but it's working great. It's still Velcroed on, so I can remove it if I feel the need to, but I don't. It's a really, really nice addition. Now, since this is one piece and it has a curve to it, then the little claw here, I've got it changed just a little bit from the way it came. When it came, the claw was hooked to the back. I moved the claw to the front, and that pushes to my belt and gives me just a little bit more tuck. It pulls the butt of the gun in just a little bit more, about a quarter inch more, when I tighten down my belt. So the gun rides very close to me. I am wearing a fairly slim-fitting t-shirt, and I don't have any problems concealing this gun wearing a shirt like this. Now, usually I'm wearing a little bit looser t-shirt, but this conceals very easily in just about anything that I'm wearing. So because the mag pouch is attached to the holster, it doesn't kick out or lean out. Some mag pouches, in order to get the magazine to ride this high to where you can just really quickly access it, it will start to lean out and twist your belt. Even if you have a fairly stiff belt, it will still lean out a little bit and it will print really badly. Besides printing, it doesn't hold in and stabilize real well, so you can hit it, you can do all kinds of weird things when you go for that reload. And since it's stabilized on the holster and it has two points of contact on the belt, it stays at the same angle, so it's always exactly where I want it. The rest of the gun stays really stable. Again, I don't get any tilt out from the gun. I don't get any weird things where it slides to one side or slides to the other and changes my grip angle. It stays exactly where I put it. So I've been really, really happy with this holster. Now, you did notice I said I changed from the APLC to the XC1, so I may end up having to purchase a new holster for this. The XC1 is, or the APLC is larger than the XC1, and the way it locks into the holster is different. Since it's larger, the XC1 will fit, but due to the fact that I have the shooter's ledges cut in here and I changed the light, there is almost no retention when I am holding the holster like this outside of my body. Now, as soon as I put it on and tighten my belt down, it squeezes the Kydex enough that the gun is not going to fall out. I mean, it's friction fit in there like you would with IWB leather holster. So it's not a safety issue when I'm carrying it, but I like just a little bit more retention, and I can't tighten this anymore to get any more drag out of it. So again, I may go ahead and order a replacement sidecar that is specifically tooled for the XC1. But other than that, I'm very, very happy with this setup overall. Now, I will say that you guys that really want to keep your guns in pristine condition, this is not the holster for it, because again, as I mentioned, lots of wear, lots of use, lots of carry. There is finish wear all over this gun. And that's just a fact of life. It happens to all guns if you use a lot. Don't get attached to these things. They are tools. So train with them. Use them accordingly. When you wear them out, replace them. But I think I've got a little ways to go before I need to replace this. But I just wanted to jump on here and give you guys a little bit of an update over the carry gun that I carry the most. So now, I showed you this. That was a little bit of a teaser. I'm going to go into detail on this very soon, but just to let you guys know, this is a Nomad 9 frame. There is very little Glock in this Glock because it is a it's Nomad 9 frame, a Grey Ghost slide, a Velocity barrel and Velocity compensator, and of course the Surefire XH35. And then a Steel City Arsenal back pad and mag plate on it. I have been having a ton of fun with this gun. I just recently took it out and shot it for a QD cam lock for Griffin Arms, a little review that I'm doing on that piece of gear. And it's a ton of fun. I forgot how much fun this gun is. I do have a Trigicon SRO on here, which we'll be doing a contrast between the SRO and the RMR very soon. So those of you guys that are interested in the SRO, you'll want to make sure you click that little notification button so you get notified when we do that. It'll probably be coming very soon because I have several thousand rounds on the SRO right now, and there's some things I really like about it versus the RMR and some things that I dislike about it. So that will be coming up really soon. But other than that, this is a really cool gun, and we're going to talk about some of the interesting things on the Nomad 9 frame coming up. So if you guys have questions on that, make sure you drop them down below. And that's going to do it for this Mail Call Mondays. If you guys have any questions or comments over anything we've covered, drop them in the comments section down below or send it to us on Facebook or Twitter. If you like the video, please make sure you like, share, and subscribe, and make sure you click the little bell icon so you get notified when we release new content. And if you want to support the content that you know and love, please check us out over on Patreon. We would love to have you. And until next time, get out and shoot.